It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Hello there, film lovers. Happy Memorial Day weekend. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Sosi. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which someday we'll update at
filmsociology.tumblr.com. You know what? Maybe we should just go... Maybe we should have a Film Sociology Twitter, and that way we would more readily access it. And
there has been word that there might be some social media of Film Sociology as well as the Blues House Party coming very soon.
Oh.
So that's a distinct possibility.
Well.
That might happen. The voice you just heard as we're doing our production meeting during the show... Also, the man who can do air...
We need to work on our marketing.
Yeah. The man who can air guitar, bass, and Fender Rhodes at one time. That's Kobe Slagle.
Love the show intro.
Yes. Boppers. And joining us in studio, it's his last piece of official work before the weekend, but I'm making sure, interim arts editor for Nouveau News Weekly and member of the IFJA, Sam Wanamaier. How are you, sir?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here in this capacity.
This is the first time I've been on with you.
That's true. That's not a reflection.
Really?
I mean, it's not intentional.
No.
So no. Well,
serious?
I think so because usually, yeah, because a couple times, whether it's Joe or
it's
Chris,
Richard? Yeah,
and they bring Sam in. So honestly, I wasn't sure if you were available,
okay.
And now I am.
Oh, well.
I know you're available. I wasn't looking at you. Anyway, good to have you here.
Oh, thank you.
And pick up this week's Nouveau, because not only can you read Ed Johnson Knott's review of Tomorrowland, which we'll get to in a little bit, but Sam's wonderful blurb on Mad Max Fury Road, not Furry Road. That's a bad pet movie waiting to happen. But also a write-up on the Poltergeist remake, which we'll get to in a little bit. I want to start with the film that we didn't see, the documentary Iris, from Albert Maysles, who, of course, gave us Grey Gardens and Gimme Shelter. And she looks like one of the ladies that's always at the press screenings, but I'm just going to leave it at that.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
One of the usual suspects. We'll just leave it that way. And then there's a remake of Poltergeist. It's out there. It's got Sam Rockwell. It doesn't have Toby Hooper. And that's... Anyway, we'll talk about... I didn't ask for a remake of this. I really didn't.
I'm in because I have a huge man crush on Sam Rockwell.
Okay, and so he might elevate it to something more than just your average 80s film remake?
Yeah, and you know, you said, unfortunately, there's no Toby Hooper. Well, rumors say that there was no Toby Hooper for the original, too.
Oh, yes.
Steven Spielberg,
William Goldman wrote Good Will Hunting, I guess. So, anyway, that's probably a distinct possibility. So, but I want to start with the film that Sam and I both got to see on a brisk Wednesday morning here in Indianapolis. Not this week, last week. But the documentary Lambert and Stamp, which is a documentary about the two guys. And it's Kit Lambert and Chris Stamp, and these guys managed The Who in their early days when they were going from mod rockers to concert stadium superstars, or as Kobe's favorite era, white rock of the 70s. Sam, for reference, except for Queen and Rush, Kobe, not a fan of White Rock of the 70s.
Oh, you're missing out on a lot, man.
I've done this. The old guy has done this. I've thrown 27 bands at him, names, and he's like, no, no. It's like Bob. No, no. Linda, Jane. So I'm going to find one. I just haven't found it yet. So anyway, but the film talks of, it's mostly about, the way I described it after watching it, it's a behind the music special with curse words, but it's also from the manager's point of view as opposed to the band's point of view. Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend are interviewed for this, as is Terrence Stamp, which kind of explains a lot because Chris's brother is Terrence, and it's on a completely different note. Now I understand why the song "The Seeker" is used in the trailer for the Steven Soderbergh film "The Limey." Terrence called Chris, got the song, kind of cool. Anyway. If you're a fan of The Who, I think you're really going to enjoy this. And I think as a non-Who fan, just especially these two guys, these were not your typical rock and roll managers. This is not the guy from Spinal Tap with the cricket bat and the other stereotypes of satin ball jackets and dirty dealings and that sort of thing. Lots of really cool footage of photos and backstage that I had not seen before. Documentaries like these, I will give them, I can give a documentary merit with Kobe's favorite word, with the flaw being if I already knew it. So there was stuff that I learned from this film I did not, and I was really happy about that. There's a number of well-made documentaries that my problem was, well, I already know this, so somebody else will probably get more out of it than I do. But this was a lot of fun to watch.
But is that a reflection on the movie, or is that just...
That's just a reflection on my jerky self.
Okay.
That,
oh, I was going to say, that's...
Yeah, that's nice. That's
it's
a nice,
your fault that you know that stuff.
Yeah, it is. It is my own fault, baby. Another blues song, Saturday nights at 8. It's a nice 101. Is that another jerkism of Matt's?
Oh, yeah.
Like flawed?
Yeah.
Good. So, Sam, I'll ask because I've been listening to The Who a lot longer than you have. What did you think of the film?
Well, it's interesting because musicians of that era seem so wild and freewheeling that I wonder how they got anything done, and how they actually produced records. And this documentary kind of shows the men in the suits behind them kind of cutting red tape and getting things done. But what's interesting about Lambert and Stamp is although they seem, you know, like slick talking, smooth guys, they also have kind of the same rebellious spirit as The Who, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, and if you listen, actually, Kobe, I should actually just genuinely chime in. The Who. How are they in your...
Oh,
in
love
your,
The Who.
You do, because they're White Rock of the 60s.
The Who is transcendent, man.
Yeah. Nice word.
I could have told you that. But what was cool watching them, and of course our colleague Ed Johnsonat was, if you get a chance, if you find Ed on the street, have him tell you his Who story. Mm. It's very cool. Or we'll just bring him in and have him do it here. But if you listen to the early recordings of The Who... And come to think of it, maybe some of the later ones, but you had four dynamic personalities. And it's interesting because they talk about how Roger Daltrey really didn't step up as frontman until probably like the time of Tommy. Hmm. And then we see him as the kind of, you know, curly-haired rock god with the open shirt, a la Robert Plant. But the fact that you had three instrument musicians that was almost like Cream, where it seemed like there were three different songs going on at the same time, because you had Pete, who wanted to be a composer, you had Entwistle, who could just keep everything solid and never move, and Keith Moon, who was literally all over the place with the drum kit and then falling over and driving a car in a swimming pool in a hotel in Flint, Michigan, being banned from Holiday Inns. That's my one claim to fame, my hometown, and Keith Moon. But yeah, you're right. That kind of, because usually I think the image of the manager is the kind of straight laced suit, keeping the boys in line. You know, kind of Brian Epstein with the Beatles to a certain degree of, you know, getting or Reuben Kincaid if you're fans of the Partridge Family. You know, getting him on the bus, getting him on the plane, getting him to the gig, and yeah, they were kind of shaking things up as managers as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting to learn that Lambert kind of inspired Pete Townsend to go off on this rock opera sort of phase. you know, Lambert was the son of a famous composer, and he kind of seemed to instill this drive toward more sophisticated kind of classical music within the realm of rock.
And here is a, and this is a proper music relationship between father and son, unlike Lars Ulrich, who really kind of had it coming a little bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this again, if you're a fan of The Who, or if you're a fan of music in general, you should go check this out, because not enough people are going to see it. People are still going to be in line to go see The Avengers and Mad Max and Pitch Perfect, and I guess they're going to go see Poltergeist. But go to the art house, get a cocktail.
Are they going to go see Poltergeist?
I think they will. Will it be the top money maker this weekend? I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised if Avengers takes it once again, because it's a holiday weekend. Mm-hmm. I know you don't want to see Poltergeist.
I do not.
And you never saw the original.
No.
Are you scared, or what's the deal?
No, scary. Yeah. I got this, Cobb. I know you can speak for yourself. Scary movies not in his menu. Not in his forte.
You're missing out
or
there
Chris
too.
Forte. He's seen a few at my demand or wager. We have a bet when it comes to, and I make sure it's something that it's a well done scary movie. I'm not gonna show you crap, sir. I'm not gonna make you watch junk just so I could be a cruel human being. No eye contact. That's great. That's and I don't open the gateway to freaky stuff.
You did open it, but it has.
It's been welded shut.
Yeah.
So anyway, go see Lambert and Stamp. It's a lot. It's really cool. It's a real documentary.
Now that was a good movie.
Okay. Also opening today is the big Disney film Tomorrowland, with George Clooney and Hugh Laurie, and it's co-written and directed by Brad Bird, who gave us The Iron Giant, Ratatouille, The Incredibles, the last Mission Impossible film. A lot of fun, that last Mission Impossible film. And this one has Britt Robertson as a plucky Disney teenager, whose dad is Tim McGraw. He's played by Tim McGraw. It's not actually Tim McGraw. And
I'm sure he doesn't have a great acting range, though. He's probably basically playing himself.
Well, you know what? To be fair, he's really good in Friday Night Lights.
He's
kind of scary as the dad who can't let go of his past and takes it out on his son. But it's a girl who discovers this other world, the title, and there it is.
Plot things.
Yeah, plot things followed by character things, and then sometimes dialogue things, especially if it's Tarantino. But she discovers this other world, and it's starting to crumble, and with the help of Krusty, George Clooney gets to be a crusty old man, and if you read the review of Nouveau, Ed's not thrilled with that. It's yeah. Why would you want a grumpy George Clooney in your movie? I do not.
So. I get the pleasure of reading Ed's reviews every Tuesday morning. They come to me first, and I always look forward to his cranky rants. Because that's what they are most of the time.
Yeah.
I mean that as more of a compliment.
No, he knows
sounds,
that. He's well aware of that. But so anyway, the world is starting to come to an end, and this girl is going to, with the help of a younger girl who may or may not have connections with Clooney's character, to try to save the world. And it's kind of being pushed as an live action adventure, I think for the family. And there's some decent special effects, and there's some decent action sequences, although a little too whiz bang for my old eyes. But the one thing which has become universal, as I've read several reviews, and I kind of agree with them on this, you get hit over the head with the message a lot. And the reason why this plucky teenager is picked, because she has signs of creativity, and poor Hugh Laurie. Hugh Laurie is the kind of not the bad guy, but the foil in this film. He and Clooney have a past together that's not very harmonious. And there's a monologue that Hugh Laurie has to deliver that it just hits you over the head like a Paul Haggis film. You know, that there's not creativity, and the world is dying, and more people are obsessed with the end of the world than they are to try to change it or to try to create something to make the world a better place. You know, Kobe, if there were more love in the world,
The world will be a better place.
Thank you, Tommy Wiseau. Maybe Tommy Wiseau should have been in Tomorrowland. That would be a movie. Then again, Tommy Wiseau should be in lots of things, yeah. But they will not let him. Move on, next question. Anyway, the film's a bit long. I don't remember if it's seen. I don't know if it's in 3D or not. I didn't see it in 3D. You don't need to see it in 3D. There's nothing really. Even Mad Max, you don't need to see in 3D either. Mm. Anyway, it's a bit of a disappointment. Clooney doesn't have a whole lot to do. Hugh Laurie doesn't either, except for delivering the big monologue about how creativity is good and we're terrible because we don't do enough of it. Meanwhile, David Edelstein of Fresh Air, love the film.
Why can't we just see them do cool stuff all the time? I'm in a movie. I have a limited amount of time. Be cool.
Thank you, Gina. Also, words to live by. So, yeah, that's out there. Now, I want to go to Fury Road, because I was the only one here last week. You were out of town, Mr. Slagle, indeed, on vacation. And so you didn't hear me squeal like a teenager about Mad Max. It's so cool.
Is it?
Oh, it's way cool. It's way cool. Now, you have seen the others?
I have not.
You have not?
No. I have not.
We got to fix that. You don't need to see those to appreciate this. It's still pretty badass.
Bro.
And you've, dude, I'm like 98% of college men.
Stoked.
You called it the best year of the films, the best film of the year so far.
Yeah. Well, mostly what I was impressed by, but was the fact that it has this kind of tactile, organic quality that you rarely find in a sort of CGI, big-budget spectacle. Like I said in my review, the sort of corny way I put it was, like, you can really feel the heat and the rust and, mm-hmm, and, you know, everything seems handmade and you can kind of feel it, like, dirtying you up.
We like a film that dirties us up.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm with you on that. It's very similar to the previous George Miller Mad Max films, all of them, of real stunts being done by real stunt people. Mm. And I've been told, and I can't wait to see it on Blu-ray, not as much CGI used in this film as one would think. Mm. So the fact that you have crazy people swinging on poles with a moving truck and then of course all the jumping and that stunt work as far as leaping from truck vehicle to vehicle at a high rate of speed. Yes, sir.
Chicanery,
post-apocalyptic chicanery. Post-apocalyptic with kind of, yeah, and of course Mad Max set the trend of, if it's the future, you have to wear football gear. Mohawks and shoulder pads and chains. It's kind of
naturally.
I like how this one maintains the kind of flamboyance of the original ones, especially with the character who is constantly shredding on a guitar.
Yeah, there's a dude on a truck with a guitar. It's a double. You have to see it. It looks like an Ibanez, but it looks like a double neck, and it shoots flames. Is, you know, Gene Simmons probably had something similar to this. But there's also a great moment where he's on top of a truck bed playing this kind of, you know, apparently Brian May was not available because he did the score for the Road Warrior. Mm-hmm. But there's a great, and also the scene with the drum, these kind of the huge giant dojo drums. Mm. And you hear the music before you see it. It's a great visual punchline of you hear this rock guitar and these heavy drums, and then there's a truck with heavy drums and a guitar guy on it. It was reminiscent of me hearing April in Paris by Count Basie in the film Blazing Saddles. Mm. And then there's Count Basie and his orchestra in the middle of the flipping desert. So that was great. And there's even a scene where the guy's playing guitar and the truck gets hit. And, of course, a wrong note happens. So, but you're right about the sweat and the dirt and the grit and the hot browns and yellows of the film. But then you have these kind of day for night shots of blue. And because, you know, in the desert, when it's hot, it's hot. When it's cold, it's cold. It's a thermos, basically. Mm. But you do have some really cool images, especially at night during the storm. Hmm. When they get to the green area, and I know has there really been an uproar by certain members of the male community because this film is so female centric?
Unfortunately, yes.
Because I first saw these online. I'm like, is this an Onion-like article? Are guys really upset about this? Because you have Charlize Theron, who does more in this film than Tom Hardy. And Hardy does a fine job. Hmm. He does. But the fact that she gets to play a warrior gal and... I'm sorry, woman. I'm going to get hit for disrespect. And then you have these great, older, leathery, wrinkly, older Australian ladies that can shoot a gun and shoot a bow. And that's a great empowerment. And that helps balance out the bikini models that are the birthing agents. It is much more females than I had anticipated. And I think they use it really well.
And, you know, Theron's character looks really cool, too. She smears oil across her forehead like war paint. And yep. I thought that was really neat.
So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. Go see it. And then, Koba, you can see this. You know what? I think you're due.
What?
You're due to, I think you get to pick the next one, right? Because, you know, she picked Annie Hall.
Oh.
You want to do the Shabazz method of you pick she one, picked... I pick three?
Yeah. Looking here at the just looking up the Mad Max guitar. It was a real flame throwing guitar.
Really?
Operational. Yep. So that was not
Uh-oh.
That's not
I'm
fake.
Sorry, our gear correspondent, yes. Kobe Slagle over here.
And apparently the truck with all the speakers and stuff.
And the drums, yeah.
Yep. That's all real stuff.
Wow.
See? And that's all fully operational.
Crazy people. Crazy people riding a truck for our entertainment. Thank you, George Miller. Thank you so much.
It's an article in Guitar Player magazine.
Of course it is. Of course it is. I talked with an old friend from high school. There was a period where I was always reading guitar magazines because I loved the stories. Hmm. And you know, somebody will tell a story about, you know, seeing Hendrix and hanging out with him backstage or jamming with him in a dressing room, and then it's two pages about strings and pedals. I don't care. Is it like that in the percussion magazines, Cobe?
Don't know. Haven't read Modern Drummer in a while.
You learned everything?
My dad did.
I got it. Thanks. Got this done. Got my diploma. You know, I don't need to read it.
Terry Bozzio's on the cover. Yeah, I got it. I know. I got it.
You know what? I listened to Neil. Enough said. It's all I need.
I've heard Tess for Echo.
Yeah.
Drum humor on film sociology.
Hey, that's what we have here, as well as Tommy Wiseau information. We have not done our cooking and holiday portions of the show yet. What are we doing this weekend? So look, you have Mad Max, The Avengers, and I think Mad Max is one of the best films I've seen so far this year. And it's one of those, it's because it's May. Yeah, and I know it's going to stay high in the charts until, like, grown-up movie season starts, and then that's the one I'm like, I really hope it makes it. I really hope it stays in the top 10.
Yeah.
It's that enjoyable. Switching gears a little bit, we're going, if you pick up Nuvo and go to page 22, as I did right now, Sam, you got to speak.
Turn in your Nuvos to page 22.
That's right.
Audience.
Pay attention. This is going to be on the final. Oh, wait a minute. It's summer classes. Yeah, it'll be on the final next week.
Final.
You got to talk to some local horror film directors about the original and the remake of Poltergeist. How did it go?
It went really well. I've found that I'm getting a lot of horror filmmaker friends, which
as well as ballet people. That's a good
balance.
That's a great balance to have at Nuvo.
I don't know what's happening with my life. I'm meeting some strange people.
Eclectic people.
There you go. You know, they said pretty much what I expected, which is that they hoped the remake would maintain the heart of the original film, which has, you know, it's not too bogged down with, like, computer-generated chills. It's a family drama, first and foremost, I'd say. And I think the best special effects in the original are the subtle ones, the ones that kind of make monsters out of mundane objects, like
right.
giving the family television set this ghostly glow and bringing the children's toys to life.
Yeah, there's a clown that just kind of wrecked a lot of kids, a lot of people for years and years. I mean, people had issues with clowns before Poltergeist. That film did not help. at all.
It's funny because when we were laying out the issue last week, we put in a picture of the clown from the new one, and one of our graphic designers is terrified of clowns. So when that popped up in her email inbox, she flipped out.
Was that? Did you do that intentionally?
I didn't know about this, okay. But the other...
he was just following orders.
I felt really bad about it afterwards. But
there was sensitivity training at Nuvo afterwards.
Okay. Somebody here was scared, and I want to talk about. Okay.
But what was I saying?
Clowns, inboxes, poltergeist.
Oh, right.
Filmmakers.
Poltergeist. A lot of, one filmmaker did say that he wasn't excited at all about the remake. And
his name is Matt.
And he said, you know, I don't see why people don't just go back and watch the original.
Thank you. Thank you. But this is why we're in Indianapolis and we're not in Hollywood pitching stuff and having water and fruit as we're having our pitch.
You know, he said, I hope it's not just like a cash grab. And I don't know. I have high hopes for it. Like Joshua Hull said in the article, you know, I think this is a good time to make Poltergeist sort of for the James Wan generation.
Okay.
And, I mean, does it need to be remade? No. But I think, you know, there can be originality even in remakes. Like, look at Martin Scorsese's Cape Fear.
Yeah, now that's a, yeah, and there are always exceptions to these rules. Obviously, I was really excited about Mad Max coming back. And, yeah, I think Cape Fear is an exception to the rule, because I think for every Cape Fear, you have 9 Fright Nights or... Footloose or something along those lines. But yeah, if you can find a new twist, and of course what Scorsese did was made the family dysfunctional and then hit you over the head with Catholic symbolism, which I didn't mind at all. And yeah, it does turn into kind of a horror movie because, well, De Niro keeps popping up a couple of times like a slasher character, but it was really well shot and well acted. So there. But yeah, I think that is an exception to the rule. I remember seeing, I was 12 when Poltergeist came out, and I got to see it in the theater. Oh, cool. I also remember that this was a film that caused a lot of discussion that led to PG-13 because of Raiders of the Lost Ark, this film, and then the second Raiders of the Lost Ark with the grabbing of the heart. And it was that kind of fine line on where do you, you know, and it led to the rating. So, trivia. Does anybody remember the first PG-13 film that was released?
I want to say Temple of Doom?
No. I also saw this in the theater when it opened. Red Dawn.
Oh, okay.
So that's where the line is around that. But the fact that it was Tobe Hooper, the guy who was, and that was the other thing, this is the guy who directed Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and he had a budget behind him and a studio and Spielberg, no matter how much we think Steven was sitting at the bench or at the helm or not. But yeah, the scene with the clown and the scene in the mirror, and yeah, the iconic image which is in the paper this week of Carol Ann and the television. You also have the Carol Ann drinking game. Every time they called her name, I don't recommend you do that. That's
I'm gonna do that as soon as I get home.
You're a grown man, but you children at home don't have shots of lemonade or milk every time you hear Carol Ann and Poltergeist. Don't do that. Don't do it. It'll make you gassy. Don't do that. And so anyway, but yeah, really, really effective, really scary. And for the inner pig in me, Jo Beth Williams was in the Cinematic Mom Hall of Fame. We'll just leave it at that. And yeah, in the couple of scenes, you know which ones I'm talking about. So anyway, remake is out there, but go find the original. I'm sure it's on Netflix or, you know, I think there's, 3 video stores left in Indiana. It might be there as well. Kobe,
yep.
What is happening at your are they out of summer session or is it still?
No, summer session is in, but let's
drive in.
We're gonna go to the drive-ins and then we're going to do festival type related things.
Well, that's good. And now will that involve plot and character and dialogue things?
Yes.
And once again, we hopefully this is the year film sociology road trip to the drive-in. That is our summer goal.
More on that soon.
Okay.
Tibbs, screen yes. One. Tomorrowland followed by The Avengers.
Wow, that's a long night. That's a long evening at the drive. You're going to get your money's worth at the drive-in, folks. Get the extra hot dogs.
Screen 2, Pitch Perfect 2, and Hot Pursuit.
Ugh.
Did you get that? We have that.
Screen 3, Mad Max and Furious 7.
Sure. Oh, yeah. That's a lot of testosterone.
And Screen 4, Poltergeist and Unfriended.
Hmm.
Did you see Unfriended?
No, I'm curious about it.
I am too, because I know Ed gave it a good write up, and it's they said it's more than just the gimmick itself of, I think, multi screens happening at once. Kobe, we'll let you know how it is.
And then at Skyline Drive In Shelbyville, we have Home at 9:15, Hot Pursuit at 11.
Ooh, wait a minute! You're hoping the kids fall asleep once Home is finished.
And then,
2:45 a.m.
Oh, that is
God.
Tomorrow morning.
God, yes. What are they showing?
From 1971.
Yes, your favorite decade.
William Joyce, Heather Hewitt, and Walter Coy. I Eat Your Skin.
Oh, nice. Hell yes.
Wonder what that's about.
2:45, yeah. You know, it's an existential allegory.
Sure.
Wow. Yeah, the thing at Skyline is that they will show two regular features, and then they will throw an old 70s grindy drive-in movie with that title in it. What's it say, Cobe?
A cancer researcher on a remote Caribbean island discovers that by treating the natives with snake venom, he can turn them into bug-eyed zombies.
Sure.
Naturally.
Yeah.
Don't tell Abdul that.
So there you go.
Wow!
So that's the Skyline.
I Eat Your Skin at 2:40.
I Eat Your Skin at 2:45 in the morning.
Could the film sociology crew handle a 2:45 drive-in movie?
Oh God, I don't know.
That would just wreck our Saturday. That would just. You know what? I would wake up and just have to come straight here for the house party.
IU Cinema is back up with the International Art House series tonight at 7 o'clock.
So IU Cinema's done hanging out at Mother Bear's. Okay,
yeah.
let's get up and get moving.
We got to do some stuff. About Ellie,
uh-huh.
At 7 tonight, and then at 3 o'clock tomorrow on Saturday. The IMA Summer Night film series, we're 2 weeks away from the launch of that with National Lampoon's Vacation on June 5th.
Hmm. Did you see the trailer for it's not a remake, it's the Next Generation apparently.
Yeah, it seems kind of tired. Like no one is enthusiastic in the trailer.
Kobe, have you seen the trailer for it?
I have not.
I've seen the Red Band trailer for this, yeah. And it's got. Is Ed Helm still in your guy status?
No, I like Ed Helm.
I know, but I mean, no,
yeah.
I don't mean
he's
that
in,
list.
He's in good standing.
He's in good. Yeah, he's your guy because of Cedar Rapids, among
mm-hmm.
other things. So yep. It's him and Christina Applegate, who's always fun to watch. And it's kind of, and they're the kids. They're the Griswold kids. Even though the Griswold's children have been played by 27 different actors. That's an odd number, I know. And now they're taking their own vacation. I believe Chevy and Beverly have a cameo. And then Chris Hemsworth is in it with, well, we can't really talk about his character. Anyway, yeah, that's another thing. I didn't ask for that. But
yeah.
And the fact that Ed Helms' character brings up, his kid talking about, I heard about the original Vacation, and he said, no, this is going to be much better. Yeah, I see what you're trying to do. Not amused. Impressed.
And it sounds like they've just added a lot of raunch and
that's great.
You know.
That's great.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not into it.
I didn't ask for that. Anyway, so
that's
sorry.
Coming up. That's coming up in 2 weeks at the IMA. You want to run through the set here?
Yeah, let's do it.
So June 5th, it's every Friday consecutive.
And
so
again, Film Sociology Crew might be there sometime. You look for us.
Might be.
Maybe we'll get you a prize package.
You'll just have to see. Who knows?
Exactly.
Who knows what works?
Hey, that sounds like Kobe and Matt.
So we lead off with National Lampoon's Vacation. Heather's after that. Casablanca. June 19th, Psycho on 26th, Jaws on July 3rd, Flash Gordon on July 10th,
oh,
Shaun of the Dead, Elf, Major League, Singing in the Rain, Friday, August 7th,
you're there.
Big Lebowski, August 14th, Shining, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and that wraps it up on the 28th.
Now, Sam, he has seen Psycho because of me.
Oh, what'd you think? Oh, come on, man. You can just leave.
No, actually, he can't. I
I guess that's true.
That, no, but it was not as horrifying as you thought.
No, it was not.
It was disturbing.
Yes.
It was well made.
Yes.
There you go.
Doesn't mean I liked it.
No, it does not.
But I'm not going to deny these things.
Right.
So there you
okay.
go.
Okay, that's good.
You're going to have to take that. And then Keystone Landmark, Movie Madness, Midnight Movie Madness.
Oh, boy, here we go. They're announced it. Ready, ready, ready.
Same thing. 2 weeks from now, Fridays and Saturdays, we have 8 weeks consecutive.
Nice. Hmm.
So June 5th and 6th.
Yep.
The Matrix.
Oh, cool.
Okay. All right. The first one. Just the first one, nothing else.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, I have 3 weekends where I'm doing a show. Please don't let the one I will really want to see happen during that weekend.
Well, here we go. Continuing on. June 3rd, 12th and 13th, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
All right. Okay. Not bad. I don't think I've watched that since it first came out. So, yeah.
19th and the 20th, 2001, Space Odyssey.
Ooh. Yeah. On a big screen. Yeah, sit up close for that one. Uh-huh.
26th and 27th.
Oh, God, no.
You know what we're going to play on the 25th? The Room Returns.
Oh, nice. Okay. I have to see if I have an evening performance of Titus Andronicus because I really want to go see that again.
July 3rd and 4th, Blade Runner.
Ooh, good one. Cool. You've not seen Blade Runner.
I have not.
Okay.
Okay. July 10th and 11th, Roar.
Roar.
Tippi Hedren, Melanie Griffith.
Ooh. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Nice. All right.
July 17th and 18th, Back to the Future 2.
Oh, because it's 2015. Got it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No flying skateboards, unfortunately.
No, and the Cubs won the series finally.
July 24th, 25th, wrapping up the Midnight Madness series at Keystone Landmark. Goldfinger.
Yes. Yeah.
An interesting lineup.
It is an interesting lineup. Emma has only been to one Bond film on the big screen. That would be Skyfall. So, and she's been wanting to go to a midnight movie for a while because she's 13. Might have to make that one. She will not see The Room.
The tagline.
I keep telling her that seeing The Room with a crowd is just a different kind of animal, and it's and it's just a blast and a good time and a hoot and a hand. And yeah, anyway.
The tagline they gave Goldfinger: everything he touches turns to excitement.
Goldfinger or Sean Connery?
Goldfinger.
Or both, really. And Shirley Bassey's still singing. Got a couple other film notes if it's happening right now at the Brown County Playhouse at 7 o'clock tonight. They're showing Steven Spielberg's Hook. Thank you, guys.
yeah.
Just
I think it's
underrated. Silence of indifference.
Really? You think it's underrated?
Yeah.
Are you the one that wrote that in Nouveau?
Yeah.
I just thought, hey, that's a new. You wrote that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wasn't all that crazy about it when I first saw it. Maybe I'll have to give it another. I think also the fact that they're doing Peter Pan and Brown County Playhouse.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Tonight at 7:30 p.m. and then tomorrow at 2 and 7:30 p.m. at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, Indiana, the Muppet movie.
Okay.
The original from 1979.
Oh, okay.
The Rainbow Connection. Yes, and half the Screen Actors Guild. that's there. And then, happening as we speak, you're missing the documentary at the Indiana State Museum IMAX, Winning the Racing Life of Paul Newman. Very cool.
Okay.
I'm going to that premiere party tonight. So.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Give him our best.
I got to interview the director, Adam Carolla, kind of unexpected.
The Adam Carolla.
Yes, from
really?
The Man Show.
Is Joanne Woodward on a trampoline? I would watch that.
I interviewed him, and I opened with what I thought was kind of a funny line. I said...
I've been there. Yep.
I said, after being introduced to you through The Man Show, it's funny to see you exploring the life of Paul Newman because he was, like, the manliest man of all time. And that's not hilarious or anything, but I got nothing. Just, like, dead silence. It was all downhill from there.
Really? Oh.
Yeah.
Here's what I've learned. Now, you're at a higher position than I ever was at Nouveau, but I will give you... is when I've interviewed folks like this... I tend to save those questions for last. Like the Peter Bogdanovich thing, which we played recently. I had interviewed him when they were showing Touch of Evil at the IMA, and of course we talked about Orson Welles and we did all this stuff. And at the very end, then I get a show ID out of him, because really, what's the show? What is film sociology about? Show IDs.
Leading the league in show IDs.
That's right. But at the very end, I then thanked him for filming the diving board scene in The Last Picture Show with Sybil Shepherd. And fortunately, he took – if you start with that, it could go either way. And if it goes the other way, it goes horribly.
Yeah.
So, well, that's a bummer. Well, now you have that story under your belt.
Well, yeah.
A learning every interview is a learning experience.
That's true.
All right, let's take a short break, and we'll talk about what's new on DVD and Blu-ray. We have a dead person we like because we don't have time for dead people we don't like, and the meteoric phoenix rise return of What Is Kobe Watching? Oh, very nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally cool. Oh my God, they're awesome. I can't smash my instruments, but they're awesome. All right, let's take a short break. We're giving Blackula a break this week.
Yep.
You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the point and WFYI.org.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So, do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Well, in case you didn't see it, here it is again.
That was fun. Who rocks?
They do rock. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Soci. Hanging out with Sam Watermeyer of Nuvo and Kobe Sligo. Hey, could you pull up The Seeker?
Yeah.
That might be my favorite Who's tune.
Okay.
And it kind of helps that it was used in the trailer for The Limey, because the power, I think, of using certain songs and used well is if you hear that song, you think of the film.
Hmm.
And yes, I know Scorsese's used Gimme Shelter 3 times. I love the fact that I have the choice to go either think about Goodfellas or Casino or The Departed. I think The Seeker, I always think of The Limey, and Layla, of course, I think of Goodfellas. Mm. I think that's just a great example of great use of film that it's buried in your brain.
I thought the American Beauty trailer made great use of Bob O'Reilly.
Yep.
Even though it's not in the movie, I associated immediately with American Beauty, which had it kind of The whole marketing campaign kind of made that movie seem instantly iconic.
And they also use The Seeker in American Beauty. Yeah, so. Yes, they do. All right.
Speaking of The Seeker, have you heard Rush's version of The Seeker?
Oh, did they do that on the EP?
Yes,
they
did.
The one where they did Summertime Blues?
Yep.
Oh, this is what... Sweet.
Yeah.
Hi, welcome back
to Rush Talk.
To Rush Talk. That's exactly what I was saying. Someday we're gonna record a pilot, because they won't let us run it more than once. But Rush Talk is our imaginary Valentine to college radio.
Nice.
College call-in radio.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because you know what? The two voices in the studio aren't enough. Paul from the West Quad, you're on Rush Talk.
Yeah, man, I was just wondering what you guys think of Counterparts. All right, love your show.
Yeah, if you're the third caller, you can win a free pizza, but you have to go when Jimmy's working.
Yeah, Jimmy knows what's up.
Jimmy knows what's up. Yeah, if he's not there, don't say anything.
Yeah, tell him Kobe and Matt sent you, and he'll know what to do.
And the album we're going to talk about today is
Vapor Trails.
All right, anyway, back to this. Nice stuff there. Not a whole lot on DVD and Blu-ray this week. The big title, of course, on Blu-ray is, which is good timing because it's Memorial Day weekend, but American Sniper.
Which I liked a lot, and I feel like I'm sort of alone.
No, it's... That's not entirely true. I think it's really well done.
I thought everybody liked that.
Well, I think some people liked it a lot more than others.
Or were people misled by the trailer?
Well, it was funny. Chris Lloyd, our colleague, said referred to it. He thinks it's one of the strongest anti-war films, anti-military films. I hope I'm giving Chris credit for that. But there is something of, and I think a lot of people have assumed it's kind of had a Passion of the Christ following, where I'm going to word this carefully, but I think there's a lot of people that have similar political ideals that really came out and supported American Sniper in droves. And I kind of am with Chris on this, where it showed, yes, there is a bit of flag waving. It's not quite like misinterpreting Born in the USA, but it does show what Cooper's character goes through. This is a guy that has trouble at home, and he's like in the Hurt Locker, feels more alive when he's out working than he is being at home with his family. Hmm. You know, not the existence I want.
And yeah, I think because it explores that, it's not like pro-war propaganda.
But I think people assume because it's Clint Eastwood and what this guy went through, and the fact that, you know, he had a very sad ending, and the film has kind of an abrupt ending on that. And now that I've done, if anything else, the film did make me go and research some of the stuff. And I think if a film makes you do that, whether it's JFK or Bowling for Columbine or anything else, then I think mission accomplished. Is Jesse Ventura going to watch this film? No. But once I did the research, that explained why that had such an abrupt ending. And if those people who've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. It's when the place card kind of comes and kind of hits you across the head. I think it's flawed. No, because I don't think there's enough footage of Bradley Cooper's character of Chris Kyle at home. I don't think there's enough of that. And then the middle section where we have his adversary, this kind of rival assassin, that rival sniper, that for me doesn't really go anywhere. So
I was hoping maybe that would be developed further into sort of an enemy at the gates kind of thing.
Right. And it doesn't.
Yeah.
But you can't deny Chris Cooper does a hell of a job. Got a nomination for it. It's really, really tense. I mean, you know, the first scene is used in the trailer, and I think the tension like that, for the most part, doesn't let up. And I think it's a well-made film. You don't have to agree with it, but I think it's worth checking out, at the very least, to see, will it change your mind one way or another? And I think that's what cinema should be about.
Oh, definitely.
Also, new on DVD and Blu-ray this week, Hot Tub Time Machine 2. Still hot tubbing?
Still in it.
Did you see it?
I did not see that. I saw the first one and don't really remember a thing about it.
I would say, did it really need a second one? Because apparently John Cusack didn't think so, so...
I thought the first one was kind of funny because it was sort of playing off his 80s persona a little bit.
Right.
All
those wacky 80s... You know, in any era or decade is used as a punchline.
Yeah.
Boy, look at the clothes and the music back in the 80s. Put on the Seeker. Yeah, I didn't see it. Some old titles out on Blu-ray. We have Criterion has two very distinctly different pictures. From 1979, the Mark Rydell drama The Rose, which kind of put Bette Midler in the film stardom. I know she had already done Divine Madness. But it's a film about a burnt-out rock singer, not Janis Joplin. Janis Joplin was known as Pearl. She's known as The Rose.
Very
good. Got
different.
It? Just wanted to make sure it's all clear. It's like Missy Pyle in Gone Girl. So not Nancy Grace. Nope. Mm-mm. But it is. I mean, it's a really solid performance from Bette Midler, and it does show that kind of the crumbling life on the road when the road takes over your life. So anyway, that's how. As well as the later in his career, Charlie Chaplin film Limelight is a living in the.
Yep.
I know. As soon as I said that, I knew that was stuck in your head.
Yep. I was about to look it up too.
I'm gonna interrupt the Rush thing for a second and just say I really love the Criterion Collection. It's basically the reason why I still buy DVDs and don't just watch Netflix.
And I'm with you only with Blu-rays, but yeah, I'm totally.
Well, yeah.
And of course, I get it like, oh man, it has to be really good to buy it again, and usually it is.
I mean, I usually get them just for the packaging, which is a work of art in itself. So,
but even if it's something like, even if it's a film where you get, I think also, even if it's something where you maybe get a trailer and that's it, or you will get a really well done essay about the film. But most of the time, I'd say maybe 80% of the time, 75% of the time, you get a Criterion disc just chock full of goodies.
Yeah.
So definitely, you get your money's worth on it. Take you several days, or at least it does for me. Couple of odd titles that are out on Blu-ray. Don't know if you really need them on Blu-ray, but they're intriguing to check out of note. One is The Osterman Weekend, which was Sam Peckinpah's final film from 1984. He was, talk about burnt out. He wanted to make, it was based on a Robert Ludlum espionage thriller with Rutger Hauer, John Hurt, Burt Lancaster as a cameo, Craig T. Nelson, Dennis Hopper, Chris Sarandon, or
jeez,
Sarandon,
like
yeah,
a clown car of
Meg
great
Foster,
actors.
Yeah, I mean it's and it's somebody who's a group of friends that have been around for a long time, and one of them is apparently a mole, and so it does have some of the slow-mo action scenes that Peckinpah was known for. Kind of a convoluted story, but it is, I think it's amusing to watch. Yeah, all these kind of name actors work doing slightly more than just taking a paycheck. But and it turned out to be Peckinpah's last film. Not exactly a high note, but I think it's worth checking out. I think bad Peckinpah is better than most good stuff out there. And then this is one that I would say you have to have a few cocktails in you before watching, because I did when it first came out, and it might be something to watch with the fellas and the ladies at midnight, gentlemen, because you have twos in your ages and I do not. Have you ever heard of Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man?
Yes, I'm vaguely familiar with that.
I saw it when it came out in theaters because I was in college.
You're old.
I'm old. That's right. It stars...
Hey, Sam, the 80s. What a different time.
Hey, you said that about the 70s, man. Shut up. Mickey Rourke and Don Johnson. Those are, and they're the title characters in order.
Oh, wow.
They're motorcyclists. Although... Don Johnson dresses as a cowboy because he's the Marlboro Man, and then you have Mickey Rourke, who's in biker leather gear, and he's the biker, but they both ride motorcycles, and it's sort of in the immediate future, and their regular hangout is about ready to be closed, and they want to keep it open, and then there's drug dealers, and Daniel Baldwin, and Tom Sizemore.
God, this sounds awesome.
Also in the film, Vanessa Williams, and I'm not kidding, Giancarlo Esposito, and Big John Studd.
Oh,
for
man.
You WWE wrestling fans of the 80s. Yeah, it is a complete mishmash, and should be watched while having several cocktails. But kids, don't do the drinking game with this one either. It's just you don't want to do that. So, yeah, that's odd. Do we have Chris Lloyd with the obits? Our segment?
Yeah, we do.
We do.
Let's doing hear it. Our the annual show of dead people we like.
There's a pretty big one this week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Yes.
Choyla Shane, who was a stuntman, did a lot of TV and movies, died this week at the age of 80, worked as according to his obit, a score of films as a stuntman, including Cimarron, How the West Was Won, Cat Ballou, the 1966 Stagecoach, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, The Wild Bunch, Peckinpah's masterpiece, One More Train the Rob, and The Poseidon Adventure. So salute to you.
Nothing
on
to sneeze
that.
At.
Nothing
That's
there.
Pretty...
And Kobe, do we have your segment? Ladies and gentlemen, an old segment has now risen from the ashes. I'm very excited to have this segment back.
And now it's time for What is Kobe Watching?
What is Kobe watching?
Okay, so you and Fair Sweet Bianca saw the Avengers.
Yes, saw the Avengers, like the Avengers. Bianca's impression of the Avengers. We got home. I'm going to do my impression of this movie when we get home. We get home, she clangs around a bunch of pots.
Really?
Yes.
Dressed as Black Widow?
No.
That was for you, dude. Sorry. I see.
Loud
I see.
Explosions, metal on metal, fighting.
Action things.
It's cool. Don't need to see the first one.
Didn't really need to. Yeah, kind of followed. But, and you have smarmy James Spader doing nice vocal work as Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
And then you saw Pitch Perfect 2?
Yep, Pitch
still,
Perfect 2.
Still pitching? Still
yeah,
perfecting?
Like, really like... See, that's the thing. I don't think... I remember when the first Pitch Perfect came out, and I don't feel like it got a lot of press, a lot of following when it was in theaters. But then once it hit DVDs and hit stores, everybody seemed to flock to it, and it became like this internet sensation thing. And I think that's when like the Vine app was just like coming out, and people were posting stuff and whatnot. And
actually, it did more. It did actually much better financially in theaters than people expected. I think, but yeah, I think you're right. It wasn't the Avengers, but I think the deal was it made more money in theaters than anticipated because guys were being dragged to this, and actually guys were having a good time. I think it did have a much bigger boom at home.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is one I enjoy, because Kobe loves films of the 70s, because 70s, Kobe?
Different time.
You got to experience not one, but two films that I have grown up watching, and I got the wonderful Kobe look of indifference, because it didn't quite have the same oomph in his realm that it is in. First off, you showed Fair Sweet Bianca Taxi Driver.
No, well...
Or she showed
Bianca,
it to you.
No, Fair Sweet Bianca picked Taxi Driver.
She picked
because she had heard a bunch of hype around Taxi Driver, and it happened to be on Netflix, so she turned it on and watched it, and then I joined her.
And how'd that work out? I'm trying to get Bianca on the show next week, but it sounds like Dr. Soucy, film therapist, is going to have to come a call in. Bit disturbing.
Not really a fan. Don't really understand what the hype is. She or I.
Sam?
I think it's
a great film.
Yeah,
I'm a big Scorsese freak.
Yeah, I think it's one of his best, and I think it definitely stands the test of time. I think it...
There are people like that still roaming the earth, ready to snap. But I think it captures what New York was going through and what America was going through. And here's one guy who I said he's like a New York version of Don Quixote. Of trying to take matters into his own hands and just going off the deep end. And some people, as I said in the film, some people think he's a hero, like Jodie Foster's parents. Others think he's a raving lunatic. I got to see this in the theater in Chicago, and when they show the scene with the Mohawk, people cheered. I wanted to get away from those people as humanly possible. They were terrifying.
And it's still influential, like Nightcrawler, the Jake Gyllenhaal movie, kind of smacks of...
It does
a
have
taxi
that look.
Driver.
And then you saw Annie Hall.
Yep.
Woody Allen's Annie Hall, which for me is his best film, and you didn't like it.
No, not really. I mean, Let me bumming me out, man. Let me dazzle you with all the words I can write and how clever I can be and how funny I can be. And here's just a collection of scenes that somewhat go together. But I just don't.
Are you
don't
talking
care.
About me or are you talking about Annie Hall?
I'm talking about Annie Hall.
Because Emma saw it. It was her third or fourth Woody Allen film, and my wife informed Emma, "This will explain your father a lot after you watch this." So, Kobe, sometimes you just need the eggs. All right, here's some words to live by.
Silent breed is people.
Zardoz has spoken.
Sam, thanks for hanging out. We'll have you back very soon. And not just because I'm out of the studio. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty of them out there. Have a great holiday weekend. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show.
It's a nice
here on
touch.
WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Cool. Goodbye, Michigan.
We go. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.